OPN Ask an Angel podcasts are conversations with global angel investors and venture capitalists. We explore how to invest, understanding investment strategies and approaches to due diligence. Join us and learn what it takes to be a startup or what it takes to invest in the next great company. Okay, welcome to the Supporters Fund Ask an Angel. I'm your host, Jeffrey Pavin. And today I'd like to welcome two investors to our panel today, Kusta and Peter. And very excited about this opportunity because Kusta, you and I talked probably about 2 months ago, and we went through, a fantastic segment of me getting to learn about all these great things that you guys are doing. So maybe to kick things off, Kusta, you can give us a little quick brief background again on yourself, and then we'll jump into learning more about Peter at the same time.
All right, and thanks, Jeffrey. Great to be back talking with you. So my name is Kusta Valtonen from Finland. Been working in IT industry for a long time at companies like HP, Microsoft, as we talked about last time. And then about 10 years, a little bit more than 10 years, I've been a full-time business angel working with the startup companies and helping them to grow and develop their businesses. And about 5 years ago, we started with Peter this huge mega project and kind of a movement around that we'll be talking about today. So we're building the Helsinki Tallinn Tunnel and what we call the finest Bay Area, so connecting Finland and Estonia with a new piece of infrastructure.
Awesome. That excites me so much because it's such a massive, massive project. I think this should be all over the Netflix and TV as a documentary. So hopefully you guys are capturing all of this and everything you're doing. Peter, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining us. Why don't we start off by, again, learning a little bit more about your background, where you've come from, and then where you are today.
Yeah. So, as Kusta mentioned, met at HP. So I always say that I kind of like started my working life at the original tech startup, so the one that Bill and Dave started in their garage in Palo Alto, California, 1939, before my time, always have to mention when we have younger audience as well. I had the opportunity also to meet with both Bill and Dave when they were still around. So they were fantastic entrepreneurs. Not only did they start HP, you know, so it was Bill Hewlett, Dave Packard. So they started Hewlett Packard, but they actually started the whole Silicon Valley. So that's where the Silicon Valley got started in that tiny little garage there in Palo Alto, California. And I think that's kind of like a great and inspirational story because, again, there wasn't much there before kind of like the Silicon Valley got started there in kind of like the San Francisco Bay Area. So you had, a bunch of orchards and stuff. It's a long time ago if you look at it to now. But yeah, so I was working at HP, both in the Valley, then in Finland. So I had was in charge of like some stuff in Finland. That was when kind of like the communications industry and business was opened up. We got the first like GSM operator got started. Competition was introduced very early here in Finland into our kind of like ecosystem, which meant that then kind of like Nokia took off. And a lot of companies, a lot of startups around that. And I was actually then ended up running something called the HP Bazaar, which was this kind of program that we created to make it very easy for the startups back then, all these dot-coms to work with HP, supplying, like these cool new services to mobile operators. And HP was in the kind of like in the role of supplying the boring infrastructure to power all of these cool new services. And HP also kind of like managed to miss the internet and the dot-com wave. So this bazaar thing was something that we put in place to kind of like then capture the next wave. And we did. So we worked with about 600 startups around the world. We also expanded this thing from Helsinki to Singapore, Tokyo, Cupertino, London, Amsterdam, Milan, Beijing, Shanghai, Bangalore, like all over the place. So it's like co-working before co-working and kind of like a corporate kind of like incubation acceleration program, but always got asked that, okay, so what is this bazaar? And then I said that, and they asked, is it like a partner program, developer program, incubator, accelerator, like what is it? And I said, it's all of that and more. That's why we decided to call it the HP Bazaar. So it's also the way I always enjoy doing branding. And while I was there at HP and doing the bazaar thing, then organized a game making competition in 2003. And then Niklas, Kim and Jarno, who were students at Aalto University, so one of the great universities over here, they took part in this game making competition. So the objective was to make the best possible mobile multiplayer game. So that was the time when Nokia, another great Finnish company, they were still in the business making phones. They had come out with their first smartphones, famous 7650, 3650, some people might remember those. And we wanted to create games for these smartphones. And the HP interest was to provide the infrastructure. So again, the boring infrastructure to power these amazing games. And Niklas, Kim and Jarno, they won the competition. They came to me and said, okay, Peter, we won this competition. What should we do? And I said, okay, you should do, and you should always do what you love to do. So you guys love making games. So why don't you start a company to do what you love? They started Rovio. And then over the following 6 years, they made 51 games. And 11th of December 2009, 52nd game, Angry Birds, came out. So then I spent many years as the mighty eagle of Rovio. So taking that brand everywhere. And also actually before becoming the mighty eagle at Rovio in 2008, started Slush, which is now the biggest and best startup event on the planet. So that's something that also kind of like did together with a few friends back in 2008. So before joining Rovio like full time. But yeah, anyway, so I've always been an entrepreneur, always worked with kind of like the startup ecosystem. And right now what we're doing together with Kusta and the people over here, we're building the finest Bay Area. And that is actually now the leading location if you look at, you know, the number of unicorns per capita, number of startups, the venture funds invested. So Finland actually was the biggest recipient of venture capital in Europe per capita. Like if you look at last year, okay, Europe low bar, so nothing to kind of write home about, but we're doing okay. And we actually have a higher number of unicorns per capita than, you know, Silicon Valley, China, you name it. So this is the leading region when it comes to creating success, if you take unicorns per capita as a metric. And with the finest Bay Area, we intend to accelerate that. So, you know, have all these interesting areas around this little body of water that you can see here in the background. So, you know, Helsinki, Tallinn, Stockholm, St. Petersburg, of course, also like interesting place if you look at the universities and the talent. So yeah, right now we're basically creating a bit of gravity here in the finest Bay Area. So that's what we're up to.
I love it. And it's a very complete background. I think the both of you have done some amazing things in the startup world and the investment world. I just have to ask on the Angry Birds side, is it the most successful business that has run through Finland? Is it huge?
Nah, not even by a long shot. So I mean, Rovio, we had the IPO and hit a billion in valuation. So it's one of the unicorns. But I mean, we have in the games industry alone, I mean, they're Supercell. They basically were the first decacorn. So that was like a 10 billion valuation. So Ilkka and the guys that I also met during my HP Bazaar times. So they are like, got their first company started about the same time as Rovio got started, actually a few years before. That was Sumea, which became Digital Chocolate. And then, okay, Ilkka launched Supercell at Slush. And then, yeah, the first decacorn here. And also you have Small Giant Games that's they're worth way over a billion. Actually, Zynga acquired them about a year ago. And we have several of these unicorns in the gaming industry and many, many more to come. And of course, here, you know, like we have Playtech, Skype, Wise, that is just doing the IPO process now in London. They are one of the most valuable fintech startups all of Europe, actually globally. So that's out of Estonia. You have Bolt, which is another unicorn. You have Wolt here in Finland, that is unicorn in the making as well, Pipedrive and so on. So we have actually a lot of companies that have been a lot more successful than Rovio. But the Angry Birds, if you look at things like brand awareness and all of that, I think that 93% of the Chinese population know the brand, 91% in India. So 9 out of 10 people on the planet know the brand. So if you take brand awareness and how fast we got there, I think that makes Angry Birds the fastest growing consumer brand ever. So with that metric, not too bad. But if you look at value creation, then many, many people have created a lot more value than we managed to do at Rovio. But I mean, that's the way it should be. And I expect to see a lot more and a lot more successful companies coming out of the Finest Bay Area, because we have the highest talent density in games. And now we're working on making that so in a lot of other areas, take AI, take, you know, the fintech that I mentioned, a lot of super, super exciting companies in the making. We've always been very good at tech here in this part of the world. I mean, Linux, MySQL, these like big open source, success stories also started here.
Yeah, 100%. Big fan of that as well. That's where I first started hacking away back in the day. So mm-hmm. I'm a big fan cool. of Linux as well. Maybe the way we can, before we jump into the conversation, Peter, maybe you can give us one thing about you that nobody would know. And then Kusta, you can jump in right after.
That nobody would know. That's actually a tough one. I don't really know what that would be.
I think for the international community, maybe the evening walks that you do every night.
So I want one thing. Yeah, that might be one thing that not everybody knows. But yeah, every day after I kind of like wrap up, I tend to kind of like do then this hour and a half walk when it's good. Good time to reflect, listen to a few books, make a few phone calls and all that. And the reason why I walk and don't run is that you can actually do a lot of things while walking. So it's kind of like productive in many ways. But that's kind of like what I do, you know, like wandering around here in the Finest Bay Area at night. So, yeah.
I love it. Kusta, how about yourself? And you're going to have to use something different from last time.
I forgot already what I shared last time, but if you just look at my background, so something that not many people know is that I spend a lot of time during the summertime at my summer house, which is in the middle of the woods where I am now. So this is a place of relaxation and kind of peace and quiet.
I like it. Awesome. Well, to the background and to the walking side, I'm a big fan. Mm-hmm. I do the same. I walk or run, but most of the time it's a walk. But I try to do that every day the same. So at least 10K a day. So that's my goal that I've been working on. Same. And I run a lot in the woods. So I'm a big fan of trekking and all that. So you guys are in some great spots. So that's awesome to know.
Yeah, we have a lot of forest to wander around in here. So I think that most of Finland, most of Estonia, it's like forest. So there's very few people, but like a lot of trees. So yeah.
I love it. So now let's dive into this amazing project that you guys are working on. And maybe, Kusta, you can share a bit more how you guys first met, and then where did this idea come from? And then how did you kind of move it through? Because it's not every day you're deciding that I want to go and build a tunnel. It's not a small tunnel. So someone had to come up with this idea and then start driving it forward. So, Kusta, maybe you can share a little bit about how this journey began.
So the idea of a tunnel connecting Finland and Estonia, the capital regions, Helsinki and Tallinn, is not something that we thought of. So it's something that has been in the minds of people since 1850s or so. So we have found some publications that engineering students did in 1861 or so. Where they had dreamed of a bridge connecting the two cities. The distance is only about 75-80 kilometers, so it's relatively short, and it kind of goes to show that people have been thinking about this, because there has been a lot of interaction between the two countries for a long, long, long time, and it kind of has kept on coming to the surface in media, in different discussions every 10, 20 years. And I think where it started for us was that Peter was attending the startup event called Latitude 59, in Tallinn roughly 5 years ago. And at the dinner table there, well, Peter can tell the story, but they came up with the idea that let's not just talk about the tunnel connection, but let's make it happen. And he called me the next day and said that, hey, I know what we're going to do next, and let's start to work on the tunnel. So that's kind of the short story from my perspective. Maybe, Peter, you can share some of the detail of the dinner event, because that was I think, a very good beginning.
Yeah, and you could also say, I mean, that was like 2016, and kind of like I was in the process of then kind of like moving on from Rovio as well. So I was at Latitude 59, which is kind of like the slush or the startup event of like Estonia. And it's a fantastic event. And then we had like dinner after the first day. And we had some Finns and some Estonians there, and we're like, having dinner, having a few drinks, and then kind of just talking about the fact that we are doing a lot together. And I mean, there's a lot of kind of like intensity there, and we have a lot of travel happening between Finland and Estonia, Helsinki and Tallinn. One thing that is not well known is that Helsinki is the busiest passenger harbor on the planet, and obviously Helsinki not the biggest city, so that's kind of like mainly because there's a lot of people going back and forth between Helsinki and Tallinn. So that's something that things about or things that you might not know. But yeah, anyway, so then we're just kind of like talking about the fact that it would be nice to kind of like not have a 2 hour, but like a bit faster connection. So then decided to kind of like, stop just talking about it and actually making it happen. And then the foreign minister, Mrs. Kaljuran from Estonia, was sitting in the table next to us. So figured that, okay, it's probably like good to keep the governments up to date on our plans. So I went over to her and said that, I'm Peter, and it's nice to meet you. And we actually just decided that we're going to build a tunnel. And then she said that, okay. And then like, who exactly? And said, me. And then you see those guys over there at the table. We decided to make it happen. And then she started laughing. And I always say that it's always a good indication about, you getting the ambition right when people laugh, when you tell them what you're about to do. And then it's your job to stop the laughter. So now, last 5 years, we've been trying to stop the laughter. And I think that not everybody is laughing like anymore. And like some people even take us seriously, which is, always, I don't know if it's good or bad thing. But we then started looking at like how to get this tunnel built, and started talking to A3, to AINS, so some of the great engineering companies that we have here in Finland. Also turns out that the A3 guys, they've been involved in building the St. Gotthard Tunnel under the Alps, which is kind of like the biggest or longest like railroad tunnel like so far. And started building the plan, the business case, now we're kind of like here. And one thing, many times, people then ask us, and what do you guys know about building tunnels? And maybe not that much, and 5 years ago nothing. But I think that with any entrepreneur, and like we all been in like many startups, and of course you don't always know at the get-go, what you will need and what it takes to kind of like make that next unicorn happen or whatever. But I think that also what the startup and kind of entrepreneurial experience has taught us, and I think that I always said that you can learn anything, and it's all about learning by doing. And basically we're bringing this kind of like startup mentality and this kind of entrepreneurial approach to a big infrastructure project. So we're talking about a 15 billion euro project. So it is obviously massive, but at the same time, a lot of the same rules apply to building any kind of business, any kind of startup. So it's actually not that different. There's a lot more regulatory dealings. So you have the governments and different kind of like parts of the government that you need to deal with. But I would say that it's not like that different from building anything else.
Yeah, and it's about finding the right partners. So we have been very honest to ourselves that we don't know how to build tunnels. We haven't done that in the past, but we found the best people, the best engineers, mm-hmm. and the best companies who can do that. And it's been great to work with them because they know how to get these things done.
So when you guys were coming up with this plan and you decided to move it in motion, there's obviously going to be a lot of costs, planning, structure. Like, there's a lot of things that have to come up at the very beginning. So just like any startup would be, you go through that planning stage, your MVP, what is everybody going to approve on this side? And I think one thing that I read, it was the distance was 92 kilometers and that there's a ferry that takes care of this already. So it's not something that's foreign to the two countries and cities, that there's actually something that is moving people across. So this is actually just a new bolt-on that's going to make things faster, quicker, and more productive. So in that early stage planning, can you share a little bit about how much commerce occurs between the two? And is this what allowed for the two cities to really tie this together to say, you know what, we could really double down on this. This will pay for itself. This is a great idea. Let's move it forward. And how did that look and where did that start? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that really view the tunnel as kind of like a big detail in kind of like the bigger scheme of things, and that's why we talk about the finest Bay Area. We talk about talent density and talent attraction like a lot, and maybe also kind of like to understand a bit of the background and where we're coming from. In 2007, I gave a talk at Aalto University about startups, about entrepreneurship to 600 students there. And then kind of sharing my entrepreneurial journey and, a bit of this and a bit of that about, startups and the experience. And then I asked the students that, okay, how many of you guys are going to, start a company or join a startup once you graduate or even before? And in 2007, we had 600 of our best students. Only three raised their hand when I asked the question. So everybody else wanted to go and work for Nokia or, Wärtsilä Kone, the government, Finnair, one of the big, corporations that we have here. And of course, nothing wrong with that. But if everybody just wants to go and join a big organization and maintain the status quo, we all know that the world will not develop too much. So we had to do something about that and get more young people excited about, changing the world, which basically is what you do when you're an entrepreneur and when you start a company. We started Slush together with a few friends in 2008 to change this mindset, change this attitude. And then we did. So we started Slush, or this startup event in November 2008. And we had about 300 people join. We had Matt Marshall, who runs VentureBeat. So we wanted to kind of like get a bit of a connection back to, Silicon Valley and get the message out that, hey, there's like amazing stuff happening over here in Finland. So invited a bunch of founders, Ilkka, who then later started Supercell, Risto Siilasma, who started F-Secure, then chairman of Nokia, Montti Videnius, who started MySQL. We had Sampo Karjalainen, who started a company called Sulake, of Habbo Hotel fame. And then we had Ilja Lauds, who started a company called GetJar, and then was the first company in Lithuania to receive investment from Accel. So one of the big guys in the valley when it comes to VCs. And some would say that Accel, Sequoia, those are kind of like the leading guys there. But anyway, so they came to Slush and shared their like entrepreneurial journey. And then the whole event was actually built by young people, volunteering to build that Slush event. And then Slush over the following few years grew to what it is nowadays, over 20,000 people from 160 countries coming to Helsinki in November. And the whole thing being built by 2,600 young people from more than 60 countries who are there because they want to be there. They love to be there. They're not there because somebody told them that, hey, you should go to Slush and like make that happen. But they're there because they love to be there. And 5 years after starting Slush, went back to Aalto, same talk, same question, how many will start a company, join a startup? And more than half of the hands went up. So we did this kind of like culture revolution, if you will, in just 5 years, totally changing the mindset. And now you see a lot of that you know, again, Estonia leading the world with the number of unicorns per capita. We've done our fair share. Same thing, you look at, you know, Stockholm and Sweden, Spotify, Klarna, you know, long list of success stories. What we did with Slush and why Slush became the biggest and best startup event is that I've been to hundreds, maybe even thousands of these, what I would call wannabe Silicon Valley events and wannabe Silicon Valley locations. Everybody wants to be, you know, Silicon Valley of this, Silicon Valley of that. You know, I go to Beijing and then I'm told that Beijing will be the Silicon Valley of China. And then the following day, you might find yourself in Hangzhou, you know, home of Alibaba. Then, you know, Jack Ma sings a song and the mayor of Hangzhou will tell you that Hangzhou will become the Silicon Valley of China. And you go to Tokyo, Silicon Valley of Asia, and, you know, Silicon Valley of this, Silicon Valley of that. So with Slush, we decided to make that event happen in November, because when you come to the finest Bay Area in November, guarantee you that it's going to be cold, it's going to be dark, and there's slush on the ground. So it's not the Silicon Valley. It's better. And it's much, much better because it's different. And this is, again, what the finest Bay Area development and what we're doing. So the tunnel is just a way to now bring Helsinki and Tallinn, two capital cities together, creating a metropolitan area with 2 million people. Okay, you look at Silicon Valley, 3.5 million people. So it's not like the absolute number, but it's the talent density. And I think that most people would agree that, you know, Silicon Valley is a fantastic source of inspiration. It has the highest talent density anywhere on the planet, you know, there in the San Francisco Bay Area. But what we are building here is the finest Bay Area. So, I mean, there's the greater Bay Area, Hong Kong, Macau, Guangzhou, Shenzhen in China, San Francisco, Tokyo Bay Area, Seattle Bay Area, but there's only one finest Bay Area. So that is what we are doing here. And the tunnel is kind of just an enabler, but okay, it's a pretty big enabler, bringing the two capital cities into one metropolitan area with the highest talent density anywhere on the planet. So when you ask, you know, a startup founder in Argentina or Chile or in China or in Vietnam, where they want to be, they will tell you that, hey, my plan is to get on, you know, the direct flight from Beijing to Helsinki or, you know, Tallinn, and I'll set up my company there because I need to be global. So that's kind of like what we are building. We're building this finest Bay Area, so the kind of like the better that we set out to do with Slush and some of these other activities. So the tunnel, important detail, but it's not super exciting. It's, you know, exciting what is happening above ground. And, you know, that's where the action is.
I love the way you put that together, because you're really sharing that it's not so much about the initiative of building a bridge, or sorry, building a tunnel or a bridge, or building a way to access the cities. It's about accessing the talent that's going to revolutionize the area and change the way people work together, change the way people communicate and build companies. And that's really what it is, which all comes down to, which is commerce and fast commerce. So, and I love the idea of putting it into a time period where people can experience the real Helsinki, the real Finland, and that's putting in an event. And the past has carried right through to the future, which is where you're going to be going. So it shares a lot of light into the way you guys are operating today. So in taking that into context, which I think is amazing that you've been able to build around this talent side. So now you go forward and you start to look at, how do I raise money for such a significant project? And I'm sure it's somewhere around the 14 billion mark, and maybe when all said and done, it'll be 30 billion to put this all together. How did
150?
How much?
150.
150.
That's how the math works. You invest €1 in infrastructure, it generates 10 or more above ground. So that's kind of like the rule of thumb in the infrastructure projects like this. So that's why the tunnel is like a big and important part of it, and it's enabling this 150 billion to happen above ground.
I love it. That's huge, huge returns. So I guess when you start to break all this commerce down and understanding it, Costa, maybe you can share, who owns all this? Is it government owned? Did the government buy it from you? Are you treating it like a startup? you guys raise money, get investors, and then you sell the company to the government? Or are you guys going to be tunnel operators for the next 20, 30 years? And how does that all work? And because it's such a massive infrastructure, it's a way different approach to a business.
That's an excellent question. There's many topics to cover there. But what we actually did at the beginning was basically what any business owner or founder would do. So we started to build a slide set around the business case. So what does it mean to build a tunnel? What does it look from a numbers perspective? And we did a first pass of that. And then we turned to our experts at PricewaterhouseCoopers. We know some of the local folks here, and they validated our business case. And it said that, okay, 35 years payback time and maybe 1-2% of IRR. At that moment, and that was not like the complete picture, but some initial assumptions and foundational information. So we thought, okay, this looks very promising, because we knew that we're missing like cargo and lots of details. So we started to work more on the detail with the experts to understand what does it cost to bore the tunnels and technology and so on. So we developed the business case further, and we found some very good frameworks to utilize, then basically we came up with the model that we are working on now, and we took those numbers to infrastructure investors who we knew that are capable of taking on this level of project, because there's not that many investors around the world who are actually capable of coming on board for a 15 billion euro infrastructure project. So We did what any startup would do. So I went and pitched our story, and then we found some very good investor candidates who we signed up some agreements with, and we basically secured the 15 billion euro investment for the tunnel. Of course, it's going to live its life during the course of the project, because we're still looking at multiple years of construction and so on, anyway, we have the framework agreed, and as Peter said, we actually have secured also the funding for this larger scope, it kind of comes to your question that who's going to own this and so on. So the company doing the development, the design, the construction, and the real estate development at the station areas is going to be our company, the Finest Bay Area Development. And the ownership will be, today it's fully us, but some of the larger investors will come on board, so they will own a piece of it. Currently, there's no government involvement, so it's a completely privately run project. We hope the governments will also come on board, but let's see how that happens, maybe. And the tunnel will be then owned by this company. The trains will be operated by the company. How the money is made is basically when somebody is using the train service, whether it's passenger or cargo, then they're going to pay for it, and the money will go to the company that's going to pay the costs and loans and everything. So it is as simple as that. All the station area real estate development, it's not going to be our company doing everything on its own, but it's going to be whoever is active in this space in Finland, in Estonia, who sees the opportunity to work on that.
Amazing. So when you guys were putting this together, did you have to look at all of the different types of costs, of course, that are going to come through? How do you make some reoccurring revenue? How do you pay back these loans? How long is it going to take you? So you're probably always refining this model, refining, because at the end of the day, in order for you guys to be able to, one, get people to loan you $15 billion or to participate in this, looking at a startup, you could put the valuation at, I don't know, 40 billion, but people have to be able to see what the returns are going to be. What's the benefit for them to be putting into this? So I can see toll rates and all of these great things that you'll add in, because there's going to be a convenience. You're going to own this space, drive people through. So I guess the final outcome is that you guys will be creating a new commerce channel And I think there would be a lot of opportunity for a government to want to step in because they're going to see transmissions of people, communications, everything flowing and commerce flowing really quickly. So do you think that once you guys break ground, that there's going to be a lot more interest of people wanting to be part of this project even more, especially from the government side?
Yeah, I mean, there's already like a big interest there.
Absolutely.
And I think that, but yeah, I mean, also if you look at kind of like the model that we built and all of that, so of course we've done like very, very detailed like financial modeling of the whole case. So I think that's the only way to kind of like make this happen. And just on that kind of like model that we have, of course, then done the traffic kind of like prediction. And we benchmarked the Channel Tunnel, we benchmarked the Öresund Bridge, or the, basically the bridge connecting Malmö and Copenhagen. We benchmarked like a whole bunch of these, but maybe the Channel Tunnel is you know, one interesting example to look at because it's what always comes up that, hey, you know, come on, that, you know, Helsinki and Tallinn, not exactly London and Paris. And that's absolutely right. So of course, Helsinki and Tallinn, much, much smaller. But the travel intensity is much higher. And the reason for that is that if I get on a train in London, it will take me over 2.5 hours to get to Paris. So it's kind of like a longer journey than between Helsinki and Tallinn, even with the ferry, which takes 2 hours. And we're now talking about reducing the travel time airport to airport. So Helsinki airport to the Ylemiste, you know, the airport area in Tallinn, we reduce that to roughly 20 minutes. And that means that, you know, the intensity of travel increases dramatically. So it's really more of a metro connection, connecting, you know, like it's like an intra-city when clearly London-Paris is like intercity connection. So that's kind of like a start. So that's why the London-Paris and the Channel Tunnel, it's not like a super interesting benchmark, you know, from a business perspective, because it's a very different case, because nobody would argue that London and Paris are the same, you know, like metropolitan area. So that's clearly not the case. And here we're basically talking about the Helsinki-Tallinn unified metropolitan area after we get the tunnel completed. And it's already very integrated, with the current connectivity, Helsinki and Tallinn are very connected and very integrated. But yeah, then if you look at the more interesting case, and that is the Malmö-Copenhagen, so the Öresund Bridge. And again, Malmö and Copenhagen, not the biggest cities on the planet, so like Helsinki and Tallinn. But what happened when that bridge was completed was that more than 20,000 people moved from Denmark to Sweden. And reason for that is that now you have the connectivity and it's slightly cheaper, you know, to live in Sweden. So cost of living and everything lower than Copenhagen. And then what happened on the Swedish side is that unemployment in Skåne got pretty much like wiped out because a lot of job opportunities on the Copenhagen side. And then if you look at this example and you look at the situation between Finland and Estonia, and you look at the kind of like the difference in kind of like standards of living, so, you know, cost of living, salaries, you name it. The difference between Finland and Estonia, between Helsinki and Tallinn, much, much bigger than what you have between Sweden and Denmark. So right now we have about 70,000 Estonians living in Finland and less than 5,000 Finns living in Estonia. So once we have the 20-minute connection in place, we expect tens of thousands of people currently living in Finland, currently living in Helsinki metropolitan area, they will move to Tallinn because it's much lower cost of housing, cost of living. And then we expect tens of thousands of people in Tallinn to get a job in Helsinki, so even more than is the case today. And that, you know, dynamic alone actually justifies the investment in the tunnel. So if you look at, you know, our business case, it's about the people traffic. So, you know, very simple, tickets. 50 euro one way, 100 euro return ticket. But maybe the most interesting thing in this, like Copenhagen-Malmö, you know, analogy is that we have an annual pass, so with unlimited travel between Helsinki and Tallinn for 2,500 euros. And you will actually save that in a few months, you know, like 2 or 3 months rent. You know, if you live in Tallinn, you work in Helsinki, it makes total sense to kind of like then go for the annual pass. And, you know, like, yeah, you live in Tallinn, beautiful city, you work in Helsinki, another beautiful city. And this is, again, the kind of effects that the tunnel will have. So it has a massive, massive dynamic, kind of changes the whole dynamic of the region. And I think this is, again, important to understand. And this is also, like I mentioned, that Helsinki, busiest passenger harbor on the planet. Why? Because of Tallinn. So Helsinki passed Dover, which used to be the busiest passenger harbor. So Helsinki passed that already in 2017. And that's because we have had this trend for a long time that the travel between Helsinki and Tallinn, even with the current kind of connectivity, has been increasing 10-15%. And okay, now before the pandemic, I mean, hopefully we'll get through the pandemic quickly and then we'll get back on track, like what has happened in China, where domestic air travel is already higher than pre-pandemic times. So I think that we'll see the same thing happen here. But yeah, so it's people traffic, about 85% of the business case, and then the freight traffic is, and then a few other like utilities that we can run through the pipes. That's like the rest of the case. So it's a very actually simple, easy to understand case when you kind of like then start looking at it in a bit more detail.
Well, it sounds like there's going to be a lot of moving parts to educate people on the opportunity, educate people on the, especially on the commerce side. So it sounds like you've had to tie a lot of different elements in to kind of get people excited about it and show that there's going to be a lot of transmission. Now you're doing this and focusing this around the train system that's going to move in and out. I'm sure there was a lot of people that you had to win over. Is there somewhere in here where people were against you? And I don't know, maybe they're creating signs and they're marching around and they're saying, Kusta, this is terrible. I'm out of here. You guys are, this isn't right. You're ruining the world or something. I don't know. Was there anything about that? And did you have to find any innovative ways to kind of help people really grasp what you're building here?
Yeah, it's always when you're doing new things, not everybody sees things the same way. So change is an important topic, and for some it is challenging. We've had our obstacles, and I'm sure there will be more to come. But we kind of look at things always from the positive side. So trying to find solutions rather than problems. And that's kind of how we have approached everything we do. And a lot is about communication. We need to tell kind of what are the, how is the tunnel built? So when we started, many people said, for example, that this cannot be done technically, or it's an impossible engineering challenge, for example. So then we brought a lot of information and the experts to explain that this is not an overly complicated engineering challenge, but it's something that can be done with today's technology. So as an example of things that we have encountered. Now, I think the biggest thing that people are finding very hard to accept is the timeline, that we can actually build the tunnel relatively fast. And it is due to some technological innovations and the efficiency of our partners. So it's something that we're tackling at the moment.
I like it. And what is, just before we jump into kind of where the startups and all of this fit in, what is the projected timeline of when do you guys kick off, when you break ground, when do you see this being completed? And yeah, we'll start with those.
So what we've learned here that some of the processes take a bit longer than one would expect. So it took us 21 months to get the government-to-government MOU signed regarding the tunnel. And that's something that we expect to take just like a few months, but it took 21 months. But that's now in place, so that's like very good news. And of course, we'll do this in very close collaboration with both governments. So basically working closely with the Finnish government, Estonian governments, then regional and local governments. So, you know, the cities here, of course, are really kind of like the driving kind of like force, because cities is where it's at, and that's something that is very important. So we have the four cities involved. So basically Tallinn, Helsinki, Espoo, and Vantaa. So we have the three cities here on forming the Finnish like metropolitan area. So that's kind of like very important. But yeah, so we expect to break ground like next year. So we have made the plans for that. And we will use 16 TBMs, 16 tunnel boring machines. So we will bore in 8 directions, 2 pipes any given time, which means that the physical tunnel we can complete in roughly 2 years. And then we need to put the kind of like the stations, the, you know, the technology in place, and then we're kind of like in business. So if everything would go perfectly according to plan, we can still hit our like self-imposed deadline of having the trains running the 24th of December 2024. But yeah, who knows? You know, we might end up with the 25th of December 25 or something. But anyway, we are really focused on making this happen sooner rather than later. And that's also why we're doing it as a private project. We can avoid the EU-like public procurement, like bureaucracy and all of that. So if we need 16 tunnel boring machines, we'll just go and get them. And that's kind of like the plan there. And we know exactly how that needs to be done. So very aggressive kind of like timeline. And we have been told that it's not realistic, but I think that it's even more unrealistic to talk about having a government-funded tunnel up and running in the 2040s. That's not going to happen. I mean, if it's not done by this private-public partnership, it's not going to happen. So I think that is, or should be very clear to kind of like everybody involved. And that's again why it's very important that we have a good experience here in Finland and in Estonia, also to some extent about private-public partnerships delivering these kind of projects successfully. I mean, not at this scale and typically not in infrastructure, but I think that is the way the EU wants to move as well, and wants to have competition at all levels of kind of like the connectivity. So I think this is important. So we expect to then connect with the Rail Baltic, that is then you know, the rail from Tallinn to Pärnu to Riga to Kaunas to Vilnius, and then all the way to Warsaw. So that is also providing then great connectivity for the EU to come to the finest Bay Area and the other way around. So again, a lot of moving parts and a lot of opportunity, but we're confident that we can pull this together by working closely with both governments. So that's what we're kind of like doing right now.
I love it. So I'm going to have to get into some quick facts just because,
yes,
I guess we'll call it a fact geek. So in this moving things, how much estimation of how deep are you going? How much concrete are you going to use? Like, do you have any kind of metrics and data around that just kind of pops in your head? It doesn't have to be exact. And then the last kind of part to this question is, because you're moving people between two countries, is there a security protocol that has to be met, or have they opened that up?
Okay, so let me give you some details. So the tunnel is 103 kilometers long, and all the way below ground from Helsinki Vantaa Airport to Tallinn Airport. The deepest point will be at about 250 meters below ground. And that will be at the middle of the Baltic or the Gulf of Finland, Baltic Sea. We will bore two tunnels, 17.4 meters in diameter. So very large tunnels, one for passenger traffic, one for cargo. And there will be room for future solutions and other utilities, data cables, energy cables, whatever. And if Hyperloop works in the future, so happy to have a look at if we can fit that in too. The four station areas we look at developing, so 50,000 or homes for new 50,000 inhabitants at each one of those. So that's a significant addition to the project. Two stations will be in Finnish mainland, and then there will be an artificial island. And the artificial island will be built out of the 80 million cubic meters of rock that will come from the boring of the tunnels. And the artificial island size will be about 3 to 5 square kilometers, so very large island. And 50,000 inhabitants there as well, fun and games, entertainment, sports, and so on, a recreational place as well. Yeah. There's some facts for you.
Those are awesome. And that is massive. And in the background, you can see that Peter's kind of shifting through the different look and feel. You're building islands, habitat areas. This is incredible. So I can see that how much commerce is going to come out of this. You're building a Dubai in the middle of the Gulf here. This is amazing.
Yeah, but then we're also known for like freedom and democracy and human rights. So we include that in the package.
Ah, that's brilliant. I love it. So how does the security side work to all this? How do you balance out being able to move in and out of the different countries? Is it passport based? Is it I bought a ticket and that's allowing me to get across without any issues? How do you balance
that? Yeah, I actually didn't answer that part of your question. So we're working with the authorities in both countries already, have been doing so from day one. And the border control and police and military people are also involved. So there is interaction happening so that we know what kind of security checks need to be in place and so on. But it's good to remember that the European Union and especially the Schengen, there's freedom of movement. So there is no border control between Finland and Estonia as there would be Canada or US. And you can move freely and the controls are more of like ad hoc or periodical. What we are looking at is the transit passengers. So somebody arrives Vantaa Airport, and then they want to move to Tallinn Airport and continue from there, or they want to go to Rail Baltic and continue from there onwards to Central Europe. There we are looking at some innovative solutions where we can make the transit for foreign passengers as convenient as possible. So there's going to be different types of technologies that we can use to make it like a smooth travel experience.
I love it. So now, Peter, maybe you can give us an idea of where you guys have tied in startups to all this. So you guys are a startup building a few billion-dollar business. How do you educate and bring more people into innovation to help grow this entire space that you guys are working on?
Yeah.
Where does it start and what do you do?
Yeah. So I think that, what we're doing is really creating gravity. So that's what we talk about all the time. And I think that this is what we're working on right now is making sure that we have enough talent here. So we have a university platform. So there's going to be international universities, all four station areas. So not only can you kind of like live and work there, but you can also study. So we're looking at increasing the number of international students at the Finnish universities in general to 150,000 from currently 20,000. So that would bring us up to par with places like New Zealand, Canada, Australia. We're also increasing the number of international high school students in Finland. So that is another way of learning, like feeding into the university world and offering kind of like opportunity to study at the best schools on the planet. And we are looking at increasing the number of international startup founders moving to Finland to 1,000 every year. So that is another thing where we're putting in place streamlined processes and programs so that you can actually come here, start your company and also find the talent because we have the increased number of students here. And the same thing kind of like Estonian side. So we have to look at this like whole finest Bay Area. Estonia has been doing fantastic in attracting startup founders. I mean, last 3 years, they've attracted over 500 startup founders from all over the planet. And with them, 1,500 people have moved to Estonia. And that's like amazing numbers considering Estonia, 1.3 million population. So it's actually a significant kind of like increase. And Estonia is looking at doing a 10x on all of that. So 10x the number of startups, investments, employees, everything. And that's actually what you will see happen because of the gravity. I mean, we've seen that in games. The Finnish games industry employs almost 4,000 people right now, and adding another 1,000 in the next 12 months. So it's significant growth. So we have the highest density of talent if you look at like just games. And that talent then, the companies, the talent creates gravity on its own. So if you want to maximize your chances of creating the next Angry Birds, the next Supercell, the next big thing, then you want to be here. And that's something that is, very, very important. So tunnels and infrastructure, that's like pretty boring in the end. It's much more interesting what that enables us to do. So we're really basically, as the name, like implies here, we're building the finest Bay Area, and we expect to have the highest talent density. We expect to be able to provide fantastic way of life and the Nordic countries and Finland. I mean, Finland has been ranked the happiest nation on the planet 4 years running. So we're kind of like enabling access to happiness. So we think that you can have a very, very kind of like successful and happy life if you choose to kind of like build your company, build your business here in the finest Bay Area. So that's kind of like the plan.
I love it. It's amazing all the touch points you guys have had to bring into this project as enablers to prove to the country that this is going to be something, both countries, that this is going to be something that's just going to take over the area and make it into the next better Bay Area, I guess, or compete if not
with the rest. Bay Area. So, I mean, and it's actually, I'd say that it's facts-based because it's Finn out of Finland and Est out of Estonia. So, it's facts-based. It's not something that we made up. It really is the finest Bay Area. So, there can only be brilliant. One.
And how many startups do you think you'll engage in this build? Like, how many startups do you think will come through and work on this project all when all is said and done?
Hundreds a year.
Yeah, we're already working with many, 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 and we're really looking at finding not only the companies that will help us to build a safer tunnel faster and more cost efficiently, but also looking at other technologies and services that will enable the area to be kind of like a future-proof city. So doing a lot of work on that.
So do you think there'll be a lot of add-on revenue streams that are going to come out of this project? So you guys have built your kind of main ecosystem that you're building, but do you think there'll be many more jobs and businesses that'll be created as add-ons for services or cleanup or anything else that's going to come out of this? Have you guys envisioned just the kind of massive changes that can occur just alone in this cities by building this project the way you have?
Yeah, there will be a lot. I mean, we'll not be doing that ourselves. So kind of like it's enabling the ecosystem. And I would say that this is a lot about enabling the success of others. So I think that is something that is very important here. And it's a very collaborative ecosystem, kind of like from, the get-go. And that's also why, we've been very successful in launching many of the open source projects here in our part of the world. And that's kind of like part of the culture, that it's very collaborative, very open. So that's, again, there will be a lot of opportunity for a lot of people to build very successful businesses. So this is really all about enabling that to happen. And of course, we expect to be very successful with the tunnel itself. But that is, as I said a few times now, that it's an important detail, but it's just a detail in kind of like the bigger scheme of things.
It's almost a byproduct of what you guys are building.
Yeah. Yeah, or if it's an enabler. So basically, by doing that, we enable a lot of these other things to happen, and by doing that, we enable actually the tunnel to be successful. So you can't really like decouple these things; they need to go hand in hand.
Well, I think it's overall, it's an amazing initiative what you guys are doing. I love the fact that you're enabling the success of others. You guys are truly enablers. And I think I wrote that line down. I'm going to use that many times because I believe that that's really what's going on here. So very, very impressed. I think it's amazing. Very exciting. And maybe what we'll do is we'll shift quickly into these other questions just because we're kind of getting close to the end. We've learned a ton. So I appreciate all of what you guys have shared and a huge fan and supporter of what you guys are building. So kudos to that. So why don't we jump into some quick questions and just to kind of share a little bit more about the investor side, and then we'll go from there. All right. So these are rapid fire questions. They're a little bit different from what we did last time, Costa, but we'll go with this. And it's one or the other, and you can both share answers. Okay. All right. Founder or who would you invest in? So this is all from the investor standpoint because of what you guys are doing. So founder or co-founders?
Founder.
Okay. I'd say co-founder then.
Unicorn or 4-year 10 times exit?
Let's go with unicorn.
Unicorn.
Tech or CPG?
Tech.
Brand?
CPG.
Oh, I like it.
Brand.
Brand. Brand or tech?
Brand.
Okay.
Tech.
All right. First time founder or two, three times founder?
2-3 times founder.
Yeah. If you have a choice, but yeah, it depends, but I would say both, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay. First money in or Series A?
First.
First.
I like it. High risk. Angel or VC?
Angel.
Angel.
Board seat or observer?
Board seat.
Observer.
All right. Safe or convertible note?
Convertible notes.
Sure.
Lead or follow?
Lead.
Lead.
Equity or interest payments?
Equity.
Yeah. All right. These ones will take a little bit more time, but and you guys can jump into them again as quick as possible. But favorite part of investing?
Favorite part of investing for me is kind of getting my head around new business cases, new business opportunities, and learning and studying the detail of those.
Okay.
Yeah, learning by doing.
All right. Number of companies invested per year?
Handful.
Okay. Preferred terms?
No.
No.
Open-ended, all right. Verticals of focus?
Focused.
Yeah, like basically differentiated. Like I'm always looking for like new and different.
Okay. All right, now these ones are personal questions. Purely personal, all right. Book or movie?
Movie.
What was it? Okay, yeah. Movie.
Okay. Superman or Batman?
Let's go with Batman.
Yeah, Batman.
Pizza pop or ice cream bar?
Ice cream.
Okay, ice cream if I have to. Yeah.
Hey, they're the world's biggest debates. 5 minutes with Bezos? Or Oprah?
Oprah.
Bezos.
Oh, I like that. We got the challenge there. I like Oprah too. Arsenal or Manchester United?
Barcelona.
Manchester.
All right, fair enough. I'm trying to get people to get on the Arsenal side. I'm not finding as many fans. Bike or rollerblades?
Bike.
Big Mac or Chicken McNuggets?
Big Mac.
Big Mac.
Trophy or money?
Money.
Money.
Beer or wine?
Beer.
Wine.
Alarm clock or mobile phone?
Phone.
Phone.
Hotel or hostel?
Hotel.
Who's winning the World Cup? Euro Cup, sorry.
Denmark.
Denmark.
All right. Now we're going to have a quick political question. Does Trump go to jail for all this stuff that he's going through right now or no? Yes or no?
No.
Probably not. It's America after all.
All right, done. Last three questions. Favorite sports team?
I think I answered this last time. Jokerit, the ice hockey team in Finland.
Yeah, I'll go with Assa then, so the ice hockey team from the west coast of Finland.
Oh, I like this competitiveness. It's good.
Yeah.
Favorite movie and character you would play?
Matrix.
And character?
I'll go with Neo then.
Done. Costa, how about you?
Star Wars still, and I think I said Han Solo last time, so let's go with that.
All right, done. All right, last question. What is your superpower, Peter?
Let's say inspiration.
Okay. Costa, how about you?
I'm good at listening, empathic, understanding people.
Both very valuable skills in helping and growing entrepreneurs, and as the line you use, enabling the success of others. So that's brilliant. I appreciate all your time today, guys. Fantastic. I got to learn a lot about not only your project, but you guys and all the great things that you're doing. Keep up the amazing work. You're building an incredible ecosystem. And the way we like to end our show is we like to give you guys the last word. So anything that you want to share to the investor community or to startups, I leave that for both of you to kind of drop a message. And again, thank you very much for all your time and sharing today. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, so I'll just say that, like, why don't you come and check it out for yourself? There's Slush early December this year, limited edition, only 8,000 people can participate. So we're making much smaller. But yeah, come to the finest Bay Area experience, Slush, in December.
Yeah, I think that's a good piece of advice. So look at also outside of your own country for the investment. So it's a global world and getting smaller and smaller.
I love it. Well, I'm going to take you guys up on that because I'm going to make my way there in December. I think that's going to be part of my plan. And hopefully the rest of the audience will do the same. But gentlemen, thank you very much again for all your time today. You guys were awesome. Well, that was pretty amazing. Getting to talk to two entrepreneurs and investors who are working and building a massive startup community in Finland and Estonia, and building this underground train tunnel is going to be phenomenal. So very excited about that. As they mentioned, they've got a pretty big event coming up, something you want to check out. And what I loved about everything they said was obviously from all the factual things for 103 long kilometers, 250 meters below at the lowest level, two tunnels, 17.4 meters in diameter, massive, massive. So exciting what they're building. But I think what I loved about all of this is that they're building and enabling two countries to work together even better and building commerce across them, across both countries, and helping build up those ecosystems. I think it's phenomenal. And I love the line, enabling the success of others. Big fan of that. Love what they're doing. Absolutely brilliant. So thank you again for joining us today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please subscribe to our YouTube channel or follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Stitcher. You can also check us out at supportersfund.com, or for startup events, visit opn.ninja. Thank you very much, everybody, and have a great day.